Chapter 18. The biggest mistake Magician Azel had made was leaving Alvi with her glasses. The smartest thing he'd done was taking her shoes. Alvi ran down the middle of the road, where there was more grass and softer earth to cushion her feet, but her bruised soles still felt every rock, grain of dirt, thorn, and barb. She stopped once to try to rip bandages for her feet from her skirt, but she couldn't tear the well-executed hem, and then decided the venture was taking too much precious time, so she moved on, stumbling frequently, in part because of the uneven ground and in part because her depth perception was hindered by the absence of her right lens. But she couldn't stop. She couldn't risk being somewhere indefensible when Magician Azel or any of his lackeys returned. She couldn't let the Discovery Convention celebrate the wrong man for Magician Praff's work. She couldn't wait around for a rescue. Alvi was no athlete. It didn't take long for her lungs to start burning, even if the road was mostly downhill. She pushed herself forward, jogging when she couldn't sprint, moving up grassy hills when she came to some, in the hopes of orienting herself at their crests. She'd felt several turns from inside that trailer after Magician Azel unknowingly abducted her, but not at the beginning. He'd driven the automobile straight for some time, which meant he'd gone farther west than Maidenhead. That didn't tell her a lot, but it was something. Alvi kept going, tearing up the soles of her feet until she was a sweaty mess and the stubborn edge of her skirt was ruined with dust and mud. But as the sun neared the western horizon, she saw another road, a paved road. She thanked God and ran toward it with renewed energy, saw a sign pointing toward Reading, and then, most blissful of all, she heard the familiar rumble of an automobile engine. A Ford had never looked more beautiful to her in all her life. It was an open cab without a roof or windows. A lone man drove it, dressed in finery, the wind blowing through his gray hair. He certainly didn't look like an accomplice, so Alvi hedged her bets. She ran out into the middle of the road and waved her hands, jumped, though it sent pangs through her feet and ankles. "Stop! Please stop!" The vehicle's brakes squealed, and the driver pulled off the side of the road to avoid hitting her. Once the automobile came to a stop, the man looked at her and angrily sputtered, "What are you doing?" He spoke in a heavy German accent. Her heart filled her entire chest. Surely angels were looking out for her. "Please," she replied in German, earning a shocked look from the driver. "Ich brauche Hilfe. Sie müssen mir helfen." "I need help. You have to help me." She ran to him and gripped the driver's side door. Still speaking German, she rushed, "My name is Alvi Breckenmacher. I've been abducted." The man's eyes widened even further. He looked her up and down, taking in her unshod and bloody feet, her disheveled hair and clothes, her lopsided glasses. The astonished look on his face told her that he believed her. "I'm the apprentice of Magician Marion Praff. We were on our way to the Discovery Convention in Oxford when our vehicle was sabotaged. My driver was injured. I don't know where I am. Please, where am I?" He cleared his throat and spoke in soft German. "My dear girl, I'm so sorry. We're near Nuhinsky. Get in. I'll take you to the nearest police station." "No, I need to go to Oxford." He leaned back from the force of her plea. "There are police in Oxford. I must get to the convention, good sir. I must stop Magician Azel."
"Magician Azel?"
"He's the one who abducted me." The man's expression slackened.
"I certainly didn't expect this on my evening ride."
"I'm terribly sorry. I know it's far."
"Not too far, my dear, not too far. I'll take you. Get in."
Tears stung her eyes. "Thank you. Thank you." She winced as she climbed over the rough pavement to the other side of the vehicle. The dratted skirt got caught in the door, but she didn't much care. The man put the Ford in gear and pulled out onto the road, changing direction several times to turn the automobile around. Once it was going the correct direction, he asked,
"Are you sure? There's a station in Nuhinsky, some food there, too."
"You're too kind, but I must get to Oxford. I must find Magician Praff." He nodded.
"Very well. a pause. That isn't the one who founded the school, is it? It wasn't hard to find a police officer once Alvy reached the Bodleian Library, where the Discovery Convention was to be held. Two of them were guarding the front entrance. The lovely man who'd driven her clear to the University of Oxford helped her toward the door. The sight of a distraught woman leaning heavily on a well-kempt man's shoulder alerted the officers at once, and the words, "I've been abducted," had them moving quickly, opening enchanted compact mirrors to alert fellow officers. They ushered her inside. She did not see where her chauffeur's savior went, much to her dismay. The officers took her to a small room in the library, a study room of sorts, with barely any books or furniture, and sat her in a chair. She propped her throbbing feet on another chair and pushed her uneven glasses up on her nose. She related the story in as much detail as she could remember, from leaving Briar Hall, to her tussle with the lackey, to finding the German Ford driver on the road, a man whose name she'd forgotten to ask, but whom the police were also questioning. The young officer she talked to wrote down her words with an incredulous expression, then stepped out into the hall to converse with others. She saw two more men in uniform outside. She had caused a stir. Good. Alvy was examining her aching feet, carefully picking tiny pebbles and thorns from them, when the officer returned. "We've got Magician Azel in for questioning, Miss Breckenmacher, but Magician Praff isn't here. He's not on the roster for the convention." "Because Magician Azel intercepted our abstract. We have a telegram stating our acceptance, but it's in London." She sighed. Her body was giving out on her, sore and weary and aching for rest, but her mind buzzed with desperation. "You have to find him. And our driver, he must have been left on the side of the road near Maidenhead. Oh, Fred." She wrung her hands together. Magician Azel had implied he hadn't killed Fred, but she didn't trust him at his word. Who knew how many hired men he had? Perhaps the one whom Alvy had left chained up in the stairwell had done the deed? What if Fred was dead and lying in a ditch, or almost dead and lying in a ditch? Her stomach tightened and pulsed at the thought. Weariness pulled at her limbs, as if great, hulking chains were dragging her down. The officer nodded and left. He closed the door behind him, a door that had at least one other officer guarding it. Like she would run away. Like she could. The door muffled their voices, but she heard "Find Marion Praff" among them. She sat waiting, trying not to think of her burning and raw feet. To her relief, half an hour later, a female officer came in with a medical kit, water, and some fancy-cut vegetables that looked like they'd been prepared for the convention's opening day tomorrow. Alvy thanked her and munched on the carrots. Her nails dug into the armrests of the chair when the officer cleaned out the multiple lacerations on her feet and wrapped them in gauze and bandages. What a bother. But Alvy was grateful. The officer left as soon as the work was done. Even with food, water, and medical treatment, Alvy began to grow antsy. It was thoroughly dark outside, probably at least 10 o'clock. She squirmed in her chair. The police officers would only let her out of the room to go to the lavatory, and she needed help just to walk there. At least she looked victimized. That helped her story, didn't it? Sighing, she leaned her neck against the backrest and stared at the ceiling, started measuring it with her eyes. 8 feet by 12, perhaps, give or take a few inches. Her pulse throbbed in her feet, and she started timing it. Her heartbeat was about 79 beats per minute. Not quite restful. She sat up straight again, if only to take the pressure off her tailbone. She used her thumbnail to pick her other nails clean. It had to be nearing midnight now. She was exhausted, but not sleepy. Eager, anxious, a little hungry. She closed her eyes, trying to alleviate the headache that had set in as a result of her mismatched vision. When she opened them again, her gaze fell onto her hands. With the pad of her index finger, she traced the scabbed over cut along the base of her thumb. The crescent-shaped mark the automobile's engine had bestowed upon her. "Usual wear and tear of service, I'm afraid. It doesn't hurt,"
Alvy paused, remembering Emma's words before Alvy, Fred, and Magician Praff left Briar Hall, remembered the cut on the maid's hand, a crescent-shaped slice that curved around the base of her thumb, the exact same cut that now traced Alvy's skin. Goose flesh sprouted across her arms and legs. Surely it was a coincidence.
Apparently I failed to lock the garage last night. Could swear I did, but I mustn't have turned the key all the way.
Alvy leaned forward in her chair. Would Emma have access to the key to the garage? Her mind flew from the broken automobile to the newspaper in Bennett's Benz. Scandal storms Briar Hall when servant confesses adultery. She chewed on her lip. For that piece of libel, Magician Praff had let Brandon, the footman, go. Yet hadn't Emma been the one to reveal him, to claim she'd seen him speaking with a reporter? Her mind worked like kneaded dough. Emma had told her not to go to the Plimmery the night it was broken into. She'd been very willing to get inside to help clean up the mess, though maids never clean the Plimmery. Only Mr. Hemsley did, for he was the only servant who was allowed a key. One of the robbers near the hospital had been a woman of Emma's size. Alvy's eyes glanced back to the cut on her hand. All the while, she felt herself growing smaller and smaller in her chair. Chatter sounded outside the door, though Alvy's mind was sluggish in processing it. Him! Filed missing person report! Maidenhead! The door swung open hard enough to slam into the wall behind it. There stood Magician Praff, his own hair disheveled, his shirt half untucked, his eyes rolling back with relief. Thank God, he said, hurrying to Alvy's side. He saw her bandaged feet, her broken glasses. Are you all right? Well enough. She tried to smile, but found her mouth too heavy to do the job. Where were you? Fred.
Fred is in a hospital in Maidenhead. He was unconscious on the road when I returned with help. The auto and the trailer were gone, along with you. I've been searching high and low for hours. He ran his hand back through his hair. I'm so glad you're well. Behind him, an officer said, Can you tell us where this cabin is?
The request pushed through the molasses of Alvy's thoughts. Is the driver still here?
We took his information and testimony and let him go.
Where he found me, she said, there's an intersection with a dirt road that winds up through some hills. The cabin is a ways up there. Maybe, she tried to calculate the length of her stride walking, jogging, and sprinting, then estimated how much time she'd spent doing each, taking into account her stop to attempt to make bandages for her feet and the variations in her speed, how she'd slowed at the crests of hills and sped up going downhill. She tried to remember where the sun had been at the beginning of her escape versus at the end.
Miss Breckenmacher? Asked the officer. She's thinking, Magician Praff snapped.
It's about 3.4 to 3.8 miles north of that intersection, she guessed. The police officer hesitated for a moment, then wrote down the numbers.
We'll send someone to investigate.
That man might still be there. I don't know how well the plastic will hold, and there will be plastic in the lock, she added, stalling him. The lock to the room in the basement, from my glasses, and the window will be broken, and... Can I have that lock?
Pardon? The officer asked.
She glanced to Magician Praff, who also looked inquisitive. When you're done collecting evidence, or looking, can I have the lock with my lens in it?
Alvy, Mr. Praff began, I'll make you a new lens.
It's not that, I need to look at that lock, if I can. The police officer raised an eyebrow, but he wrote on his paper again, nodded and left the room.
Why the lock? Magician Praff asked.
While that was a conversation of great interest to her, Alvy switched to a more pressing subject. Lowering her voice, she said, Emma, sir.
What does Emma have to do with a clogged lock?
She shook her head and showed him the cut on her hand. Nothing. I mean, Emma. I think she's been... She could hardly bring herself to say it. It felt wrong to accuse a woman who had been nothing but friendly to her since her arrival. So she didn't. Instead, she recounted all the evidence she herself had just collected, bit by bit, to Magician Praff. From the way the polymaker's face paled and slacked as she continued to speak, she knew he was coming to the same conclusion. Blast, he swore, shaking his head. Emma, I'll have to send a telegram straight away, have her apprehended. And Brandon, he rubbed his eyes, then swiped his palm over his face. About the lock, sir, he glanced up. Alvy swallowed. It's how I got out. I melted the plastic in the lock, but I swear I used a smelting spell to open it, and... The door opened, the police officer who'd bandaged Alvy again. I apologize, Magician Praff, but I need to record your story before you speak any further with Miss Breckenmacher. The polymaker stood. Yes, yes, of course, immediately, whatever you need. The officer nodded, and Magician Praff followed her out, leaving Alvy alone once more. That's preposterous, Alvy shouted across the desk. She'd spent some time sleeping in that chair in the library before the police officers had escorted her to the Oxford police station and given her a cot. She had shoes now, sized large enough to accommodate her bandages, and a tie for her hair, though she still wore the same dirty clothes as the day before, and her glasses were a sorry mess. She had taken to winking often to favor her left eye. Beside her, Magician Praff sat stiff as if all his insides were full of knots. She knew the police had contacted the locals in London concerning Emma, but her knowledge of the situation ended there. The two of them sat across from the chief of police, a desk between them. He had just finished relating Magician Azel's side of the story, which was what had elicited Alvy's outburst. I'm merely regurgitating what was told to me, the older, thick man said patiently. He was broad-shouldered and shaped like a rectangle, with a thick gray mustache and thicker gray eyebrows. You must understand that Magician Azel did have an abstract submitted to the Discovery Convention for the items you claim he stole. We're working to get a copy of it now. He has witnesses to testify to his locations yesterday. His own preliminary was broken into 5 months ago, and he claims plans for this prosthesis were among the items stolen. Sly dog, Magician Praff muttered. Every single plan. I would like very much to read that abstract, Alvy insisted. Had Magician Azel submitted the exact same abstract he'd intercepted from Magician Praff? Had he somehow lost it, and thus Emma's attempt to get another copy? So many questions assaulted her, and Alvy suffocated trying to answer them. The chief of police sighed. I will read the abstract, Miss Breckenmacher. We will get to the bottom of this. Magician Praff asked, The cabin? Yes, we found the cabin, and everything was as Miss Breckenmacher said it would be. There was no man chained up at the bottom of the stairwell, but there was melted plastic looped around the rail. Torn fabric was embedded in it. Scuffs on the wall indicated a struggle. He looked down at the paper in his hand. The deed for the property is in the name of a Mr. Garrett, whom we are also trying to locate, but we found no other records with his name. I see, said Magician Praff. The chief of police took a deep breath. I should also inform you that Magician Azel is very put out by these accusations. He's hired a solicitor and has begun the process of having Miss Breckenmacher deported. He'll have a good case if he can link you to the burglaries. Alvy felt her body temperature drop at least 0.7 degrees. You're joking. The man looked at her with his stern, aging face. No, he was not joking. I assure you, he went on, that nothing will go forward until we determine the truth of this incident. But I also cannot allow either of you to leave. Alvy hugged herself. But the convention... Neither you nor Magician Azel will be allowed into the convention until we sort this out. Magician Praff nodded, ever pragmatic. Very well. A few hours later, another officer arrived with a change of clothing for Alvy, straight from her closet, meaning he'd gone to Briar Hall. He'd probably questioned the family and servants while there. Maybe he'd even apprehended Emma, but he wouldn't answer when Alvy asked. Everything inside Alvy was tightly wound, but she felt some relief when she discovered a pair of glass lenses sandwiched between the blouse and skirt.
Magician Praff must have told the officer where to find them. With some effort, she popped the right one into her frames. Her headache almost immediately subsided. It felt wonderful to be able to see again, even if she might not be seeing England for much longer. Deep breaths, Alvie. She needed to stay calm. She needed to trust the system. Magician Azel couldn't keep his ruse up forever. He couldn't pin the burglaries on her. She hadn't even been in the country for the first two. It wasn't until late afternoon, the first day of the convention was nearly over, that Alvie and Magician Praff were called into a conference room. Several police officers filled it. At the far end of a long table, Magician Azel sat with a man Alvie presumed to be his lawyer. You! He stood up, but the heat of his gaze fell on Alvie first, not Magician Praff. How dare you! The lawyer placed a hand on his shoulder, and the chief of police said, Sit down, Magician Azel, or this will take longer than I have the patience for. Magician Azel sat down. Alvie scowled at him. He was a terrific actor. The chief sat down on a chair equidistant from both ends of the table. Alvie and Magician Praff sat at the end closest to the door, opposite Azel. The other police officers remained standing. The chief gestured to a young, balding man in uniform. This is Officer Caldis of the North London Police Department. He is one of the officers dealing with a string of preliminary burglaries, most recently Magician Praff's. The lawyer said, A burglary in which the culprit was never caught, to which only Miss Breckenmacher was witness. Obviously a staged cry for attention, or means to cover up greater crimes. Alvie bristled. The chief ignored the lawyer and said, Officer Caldis. We have written documentation of Magician Praff's testimony, which includes his concern over the possible theft of a prosthesis. We also have a testimony from Magician Azel detailing what was taken from his property last October, though nothing specifying prosthetic limbs. Magician Azel's shoulders straightened into razors. Do you think I'd give away the secrets for my greatest work, so they could be printed in the paper later for all to see? The lawyer said, My client can provide records. Magician Azel leaned over to the man and whispered something to him. The man nodded. Neither of them said anything more. Alvie's heart tried to grow legs and climb right out of her throat, but she settled it down with a cough. The chief reached under the table and set Ethel's prototype before him. You went through my room? Magician Azel asked. The chief raised a brow. You think I wouldn't get a warrant to do so? Magician Azel remained quiet. His lawyer whispered something to him. We've obtained a copy of the paper submitted by Magician Roscoe Azel to the Board for the Discovery and Material Mechanics Convention on November 14 of last year. However, while the paper discusses a project promising to change an entire facet of medicine, it does not specifically mention a prosthesis. The lawyer said, It's common with this convention for such submissions to remain vague. It is, the chief nodded. Alvie worked the words over and over in her brain as her fingers smoothed the wrinkles from her skirt. Wasn't that something similar to what she'd said to Magician Praff at the polymer depository? She dug her nails into the table. Maybe you should ask him about Emma, she mumbled. Excuse me, the chief of police asked. Alvie cleared her throat. I said, maybe you should ask him how much he's paying my maid, Emma. Magician Azel blanched, though his expression remained neutral. I'm not familiar with your employees, Miss Breckenmacher. The chief continued on about the arm, not Emma, but Alvie couldn't hear him above the buzzing in her mind. Azel was in possession of the prosthesis. He knew all about it. Perhaps had already drawn out sketches to look like early plans for the thing to use as later evidence against Magician Praff and herself. No doubt he'd dumped the Imagidome and any other materials that might be incriminating. And yet, if Alvie and Magician Praff had been detained this entire time, then Magician Azel must have been too. He wouldn't have had much time to study the prosthesis, to learn more about it, to experiment with it. Just as Alvie had experimented with that door in his basement. Magician Azel had asked Alvie
if she really thought he was some overzealous villain ready to slip up. But he was. He had. He'd set up everything so perfectly, the break-ins at the other preliminaries, making himself a victim, using thugs so he'd never be found at a crime scene. But the appearance of Alvy had thrown a wrench in that. She was not only a witness, but her unexpected presence had eaten up Magician Azel's precious time. His crime was behind schedule. "Excuse me?" All eyes turned to her, and she realized she'd interrupted the chief mid-sentence. "Alvy," Magician Praff warned. She ignored him. "Sorry, but if Magician Azel is the true creator of this work, why not ask him how the prosthesis works?" The rogue polymaker's expression finally slipped. "Excuse me?" asked the chief. "This woman is in contempt of," started the lawyer. "This isn't a bloody courtroom," snapped Magician Praff. Alvy stood up. "If this is truly Magician Azel's creation, then have him demonstrate how it works." Magician Azel snorted. "Please, it's only a prototype." She didn't even look at him. She kept her eyes locked with the chief's. The abstract Magician Praff tried to submit to the convention discusses a previously undiscovered spell in polymaking. Obviously, the true creator of this prosthesis would know the spell. So have Magician Azel tell us what it is. The lawyer said, "This is harassment." Magician Azel added, "This is to be the highlight of my display. I can't possibly..." The chief turned his steely gaze onto Magician Azel. "We're hardly a large audience. Do as she says." The lawyer said, "This is unfair treatment of my client. As Magician Praff said, this is not a courtroom, and you do not have the right to demand anything from my client." The chief of police glowered. "I have the right to throw him in a jail cell until the system affords the time to appoint a trial." Magician Azel's white fingers gripped the edge of the table, yet his jaw was set in what looked like confidence, or maybe determination. He stood swiftly, knocking his chair back, and came around the table, moving toward the chief of police. He stared at the prosthesis for several seconds before reaching forward to grasp it. The polymaker held the prosthesis in both hands, turned it this way and that, subtly, but his behavior screamed that he had yet to discover the spell. Alvy sat back down as she waited for him to speak. Everyone did. The room was silent as a morgue. Magician Azel held the arm out like it was an extension of his own and said, "Heed direction." Alvy's thoughts rushed through her mind in a blur. That was what he decided to try? An already discovered spell, and one a first-year apprentice would know? He'd lost it. The arm didn't move. He knew he had lost, and now everyone in the room knew too. Magician Azel's eyes glistened, and Alvy almost felt bad for him. Almost. The chief of police stood, but before he could utter a word, Magician Praff rose from his seat and reached forward, taking the prosthesis from Magician Azel's hand. He didn't even clear his throat before saying, "Compress." The liquid plastic inside the plastic tubes of the arm pressurized and straightened out all five of the prosthesis's fingers. Alvy grinned. The chief groaned. "Arthur, place Magician Azel under arrest for the theft of property and abduction. We'll add to the list later." Magician Azel jerked back as though struck. "He's tinkered with it somehow. This is hardly conclusive evidence. This is outrageous." "Do quiet yourself, Mr. Azel," the chief of police said in an almost bored tone, "or you'll give me even more fodder for charges." Magician Azel's mouth snapped closed just before the policeman named Arthur came behind him with a pair of handcuffs. Giddy relief surged through Alvy like a geyser. Jumping from her chair, she threw her hands up in a cheer, then landed on her sore feet and promptly fell over.